Welcome. This is Christopher Calandra for the Simply Financial Podcast. We are in season number 4, and this is episode number 23.
I have a special guest today. With me is Kevin McGarry, who is a sales executive and a leader in the financial services industry. He brings a tremendous record of success and expertise in building and leading high-performing teams. Kevin most recently served as Vice President of National Sales at Nationwide Mutual Funds. He was responsible for all mutual fund and ETF sales across all channels. Prior to that, with Nationwide, he was the leader of the Nationwide Retirement Institute, which is a unit of Nationwide which focuses on educating financial advisors like myself about the latest retirement income planning trends. I'll also add that my brother works for Nationwide, and he worked with and for Kevin, and my brother thinks the world of Kevin, and that's also a big reason why I know Kevin. So, Kevin, thanks for joining me today.
Chris, thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our conversation as well.
So when we were talking, just as friends, I found out that you are pursuing your doctorate. I have a bachelor's and I have my certified financial planning designation, which I'm pretty proud of. That's a difficult designation to get. It's a lot of study and a nasty exam, but pursuing your doctorate seems so unbelievably impressive. So tell me about you pursuing your doctorate.
No, if you look at the doctorate program, you know, the reason I got into it is I've always been a lifelong learner, someone that's looking for continuous improvement, not only for myself, but also for my teams as well. And I got into the doctorate program after completing a master's in coaching. And the doctorate is focused at the University of Wales, Trinity St. David out in the UK. And the doctorate will be in professional practice of coaching and leadership. So it's really I'm now into the thesis, which is really focused on leadership itself. But it's just a great opportunity to continue studying, continue to advance my own knowledge of the industry and what I can bring to my teams and obviously the firms that I work for as well.
That is awesome. I think you and Kristen, your wife, actually, you went to the UK for a ceremony of some sort, right?
Yeah, we had a for the Middlesex University, which is where my master's was, I had an opportunity to walk at graduation, which is awesome. I actually had an opportunity to speak at graduation as well. But it was, you know, over there, spend a little bit of time and go through the ceremony, which was awesome for my daughter to see. And then went back through the doctorate program. There's a residency about once a year. So go to Wales and spend about a week going through classes and just an opportunity just to meet a bunch of people throughout the rest of the world, but also spend some time studying as well.
That is terrific. Now, in your previous role as national sales manager, and as I said, with the Retirement Institute, I think it was similar, not identical, but similar role. At that level of organizations, you know, a big successful company like Nationwide, is it common for people in those roles to have a doctorate? It seems that this will make you a unique characteristic of your resume, no?
Very much so. In most sales leadership roles, you find folks with a bachelor's, occasionally a master's or an MBA. Very rarely do you see somebody out there with a doctorate or even pursuing a doctorate.
It seems to me, having been in the business, Kevin, for 28 years now, and this is just my sense, I haven't put any analytical rigor to it, but it seems like a lot of people that rise to the level of national sales managers, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, it's just that they were very successful as salespeople running territories, and then they climb the ladder, but don't necessarily have the management educational background that you have. It's pretty impressive. I'm impressed. That's why I wanted to have you on the show. I could say that I had a doctor on the show. That's pretty cool. We're almost a doctor.
Almost, not yet.
When will I have to call you doctor?
No, just It's one of those things where you look at this industry, it's you tend to see leaders kind of emerge as your top salespeople become sales leaders and then kind of become nationals and move up within organizations. And a lot of times, through financial services, there's not the training as far as how to lead, how to manage, how to motivate folks. And I've always looked at through my career, what are the best pieces I could pull away from my prior leaders, or the best and the worst, and how do I emulate the best and change the worst traits that you see? And that's what studying leadership and motivation has really been helpful for me, to just become better at what I do, and then bring the best of kind of all industries to my own leadership skills and leadership style.
Wonderful, wonderful. One of the key reasons, and you have to admit, right, to all my listeners, I've been after you a while to get on the show, so I finally hooked you in on the schedule, is one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is your doctoral thesis. Can you tell us what your thesis is?
Yeah, my thesis, it's focused on the millennial generation. And so the question, so each thesis is going to have kind of a question that you're going to answer. And the question that I've kind of created is, how will leadership need to evolve to effectively lead the next generation of millennials within financial services, legal, and accounting industries? And I picked those three because they kind of intersect, as you know, right? From a financial services standpoint, sure. Your clients are working with, legal to do trust work or what have you, and they're working with their accountants on a regular basis. So the three services really become a partnership and a core of for an individual client to work with. And so I'm really trying to understand, leadership will change, and how does it need to change effectively to lead that millennial generation?
So I think that's terrific, and actually I think in your master's you had studied something relating to why some people are high earners or the traits of high learners, right? So it's kind of a related topic. What was your master's? I know I'm mucking up exactly what it was, but tell me what your master's was.
So my master's thesis was focused on motivation and what motivates top-level sales professionals from mid-level sales professionals? And are the motivators different in way from a sales leader? Can I bifurcate through an interview process or through getting to know someone, will they potentially be a top performer or a mid-level performer? And then if you have on your team, obviously everyone has a mid-level performer and they've always got top, how do you lead differently to motivate those individuals to make the best opportunity for sales success? So it is tied in.
So before we double back to the doctorate, it's fair to say, though, that this topic you just talked about, your doctorate kind of builds upon that work. They seem closely related, no?
Most definitely. And it's the motivators of sales professionals. And then from that standpoint, if you look at motivators, the doctorate kind of builds on it to say, okay, well, now as a leader, how do I lead more effectively, not only for mid and top performers, but that next generation of sales professionals and associates as they come into the workforce.
So in working on your master's and looking at the motivators, can you give us some of the key ones that you found through the research that also are backed up with your real life experience being in industry?
Yeah, definitely. What I found through the research on the thesis is there's four key motivators. The first are financial incentives. The second is a drive to win. The third is aspirational goal setting. And the fourth is consistency. Now, whether you're mid-level or top-level performer, those are the four motivators for each. And the differentiator, so I'll use financial incentives as an example. Financial incentives, money, is from a sales professional, it's a driver, it's a motivator. The difference is, what does money mean to a top performer versus a mid-level performer? So as an example, your top performer, they're looking at, I want to earn as much as possible to create a safety net and to have a little bit of money set aside in case something happens. They always want to have that treasure chest of a safety net. Where your mid-level performers tend to be driven by money to pay for a country club, a boat, a monthly payment, a college tuition, something very short-term in nature from a goal standpoint.
Right.
So when someone says, oh, yeah, I'm motivated by money, okay, well, what do you do? Why does money motivate you? And now all of a sudden that next level answer separates what you would see as a top level versus a mid-level performer.
No, that's interesting because we're in the same industry, Kevin, but of course, you know, different parts of it. And my work as a financial planner, I see that, what you just described, play out a lot. Some people are motivated to build wealth and be smart with money because they may, as an example, have grown up with a lack of money or poverty or with a family that had fallen on hard times. And they're really motivated to build wealth because they never want to be in that vulnerable position again. It's less about having a beautiful car and traveling and the big house, although they may get that stuff, but they're really driven by not wanting to be vulnerable and wanting to have security. And on the other side, and you just spoke about this, is some people are driven to build wealth, to make money, and to win with money because they do want to retire early and they're goal-oriented and they're trying to accomplish things. But they're very different motivators, even though if you just ask a basic question, the two scenarios may sound similar at first glance. But once you probe a little bit and you get them talking, you find out their motivations are very, very different.
Yeah, and in what you're doing, dealing with individual investors on a day-to-day basis, it's the same as, you know, a sales leader working with wholesalers. It's, what's that probing question? How do you uncover just a little bit more insight or information so we can all do a little bit better job of directing goals, incentives, and motivators for whether it's a client to help them achieve their goal or a financial advisor achieving their goals as well.
So it seems, looking at your full bio, it seems like as a lifetime learner, you used that term earlier, that this topic has resonated with you a long time. This is not something that you just kind of stumbled on, right? Because
right.
What did I see in your, what's your undergraduate degree in?
Finance from UConn.
So this is an area, this leadership, this motivation is an interest of yours for a long time. Of all the topics you can select, why does this one of such important interest to you?
Part of it is I look at my career and the different leaders that I've had, whether they were, you know, when I was in high school working for an individual, whether it was a lifeguard or working at, I can't believe it's not yogurt, and you know, having a manager at that point, versus getting into a career in the financial services space and, you know, having a variety of different direct leaders and leaders of at the senior level, understanding how different they have been really has, for me, continued to say, how do I learn to be better at leadership? And then the second piece is looking at demographics, right? As an example, today, millennials account for about 35% of the workforce. There's a fair amount of millennials in the workforce, but by 2025, 75% of the global workforce will be millennials. And if you look at financial services, Goldman Sachs today has about 89% of their workforce are millennials. So it's a group that's coming. And from my experience in my last role and seeing it nationwide, you know, a large number of millennials within the workforce, they tend to act a little bit differently. They have different objectives, and they're coming in with a different level of experience than maybe a Gen X or a baby boomer. And so I've found across the industry, as I've talked to peers, there's been folks that have challenged and really said, how do I lead? How do I drive for better results with the millennial generation? And really connect with them effectively to allow them to be their best and to accomplish the goals that they've set out to accomplish.
All right. Very good. So with the millennials and with your doctorate, I don't believe you completed your work, right?
That's correct. I'm about halfway through the doctorate, which is I've finished all the classwork. And now I'm into and I've gotten approval for my research, and I'm now actually just kind of working through a literature review, which is your first phase of the thesis, kind of understanding what research is out there in market today, and then how can your research add on to existing work that's already been done.
So at this point, getting the approval must have included you making some initial assumptions of what you wanted to look at and research. Is that an okay way to look at it? Can you share with us some of your initial assumptions, what you're seeking to solve for?
Yeah, I would say the work itself says, all right, to get approval, it comes down to what are the assumptions that I have that I want to solve for, and understanding what else has been put in place from research. The assumptions that I've looked at, and it's through conversations I've had with millennials, with other leaders that are leading millennials, and whether they're a millennial themselves or not. But the initial assumption is that millennials are, to some extent, misunderstood by leaders. Many leaders, they think millennials, want to get promoted before they're ready. They don't work hard. They want to come in late. They want to leave early. There's a bigger focus on work-life balance, but more tilted towards life than work. And so, my assumptions coming into this are, how do I take biases or kind of reputation that may be out there on millennials and say, is it the millennial that in how we lead a millennial, or is it the leader in how we show up as a leader? How do we change our own style as leaders to be more effective and to say, those that work for you don't necessarily need to change to the style or the expectations of a leader? How does a leader change maybe their assumptions or perceptions to be better at connecting with that generation as an entirety, I guess?
And so do you think, you talked about the reputation of millennials. In many circles, millennials have a negative connotation. And I'm a history buff, Kevin, so I mean, to a certain extent, this is just normal. Most generations look at younger generations and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe the future of the country or the future of the company is in these people's hands. I think that's, another version of American apple pie. But it seems to me that it's a little bit more severe with millennials. And maybe I'm wrong just because I'm Gen X, so I'm ahead of the millennials on the generation curve. But it seems to me their reputation is a little more severe, I think, than maybe my generation was judged by the generation ahead of me. You think that's a fair assessment, what I'm saying?
Well, I know what you're saying, because I'm a Gen Xer as well. And so I kind of think back to when I entered the workforce, and I think the reputation of the Gen Xer, coming up as a latchkey kid was, a bunch of slackers, don't really want to work that hard. And you then fast forward to right the reputation of millennials, which is, that everyone gets a trophy, don't really work that hard. So you wonder, is it just a dynamic more necessarily of, or less of a generation versus a point in time of a 22-year-old coming into the workforce versus a 35 or a 45 or a 55-year-old in the workforce? And so I think the reputation is probably biased by a lack of understanding the desires and the true work ethic of a generation. Gen Xers is one example, millennials is another. But I also believe that there's a level of, what are we doing as Gen Xers to offset the reputation that we entered the workforce coming into as slackers versus millennials coming into the workforce? How do they understand what that reputation is and do their best to show that that's not an accurate depiction of the entire generation?
And do you think in general, now listen, every generation, Kevin, has their bad eggs, lazy people. I mean, every generation does. But this overall reputation that's kind of negative, do you think by and large it's well-deserved? My experience is limited, but at the same time, between clients that are millennials, and I have a small team here at Elliott Wealth Management, but you know, we have much of the team is comprised of millennials. Three of the six or seven are millennials. It's a little bit of like the haves and the have-nots. I mean, it seems to me there are some millennials that are amazing, hardworking, yeah, creative, do have old-school American values that might have been updated a little bit, but are very similar to Gen Xers and other generations that have come before. And then there's another group that I think is where the reputation comes from. And I think they're a smaller contingency, but they're the ones that you get, like, live in your mom's basement and want everything today and are a little lacking in the work ethic department. But it seems to me, I have no worries about the millennial generation. There are enough outstanding millennials to carry the day and make up for, to be nice, the weaker part of their generation, those that aren't that interested in working hard or smart. Is that your opinion too?
It is. And one of the things I've seen is in having millennials work for me and working with a number that didn't work directly for me, but I've interacted with over the years. What I find is those that have a purpose and know kind of what they're focused on and where they're going, I mean, they are the most innovative, hardest working. They're going to get it done. They might do it in a different manner, right? So, you know, they might come in an hour late because they went to the gym in the morning, but they'll stay an extra hour or 2 hours late. They're going to get done and be more efficient and effective at what they're doing, and they're probably much more adept at technology and being able to utilize the resources that they have at their fingertips to bring together better solutions. So I'm very optimistic for the millennials. They will lead this country and obviously the companies that they work for very effectively into the future. And so I'm definitely optimistic about it.
So you mentioned purpose. And thinking back, I'll be 50 this year. I think you and I are similar in age.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is I don't remember when I was in my 20s, the idea of Gen Xers with the idea that work needed purpose. And that's not to say that, you know, me and my friends wanted to do jobs that were wasteful or uninteresting or ran against our values. But purpose seems to be one of those things that has evolved into a more important attribute in hiring, retaining successful employees and team members and partners and clients. So thinking about your thesis and what you've learned, purposes is one of those things that is not unique to millennials, but it's a little bit more special than other generations. Is that a fair assessment?
I would agree with that. As you look at, I think, the Gen Xers in general, it's my own personal experience, I didn't necessarily need a purpose initially, you know, getting into the workforce. But now you look at millennials where, in general, they're looking for more of a purpose-driven organization. They're looking to give back to different causes that are important to them. And from a retention standpoint, from a motivation standpoint, having that purpose structured effectively, it really helps put everyone on the same page and going in the right direction. I think over time, me personally, purpose became more important. But initially, it wasn't there as it is today for millennials coming into the workforce.
And can you think of other things relative to leadership and millennials that is sort of special? Again, I think every generation has elements of this. That's why I'm trying to find the right term. But can you think of another example that would be worth noting when interacting with millennials because of just something special related to their generation and the world that they grew up in?
Yeah. Millennials, in just the research that I've seen, is millennials have grown up with parents that they were, and teachers and quote unquote authority figures that they were encouraged to question, and they, you know, questioned, well, why are we doing that, or having a different dialogue with and a different relationship with their parents. And so that mentality has transitioned into the workforce as well, where millennials in general are much more apt to speak up, and which is fantastic because they've got great ideas, but they're much more apt to jump into a conversation, have a more effective conversation with a senior leader that prior generations at their same point in their career probably would not have had. So you get their viewpoint much more effective and earlier within a conversation, and it goes up the ranks of the organization. So that also then comes down to the leaders to say, it's now on me as a leader to explain the why, to make sure that everyone understands why we're doing something and where we're headed, and to be able to be willing to hear the voices of all those across the organization that are now, frankly, more willing and able to give that opinion than maybe prior generations would have at the same point in their careers.
Beautiful. That's good. That's really good. Can you point to anything with millennials where you would be a little critical, where you say this characteristic or element to millennials thinking is an area that as a leader you would like to see them improve on as they mature into the workforce? And that's I'm not suggesting they're immature in the workforce, but is there anything you could point to a little critical that you think is an area of improvement for millennials? Of course, we're stereotyping, but we're talking about a huge class of people. But is there anything you could point to?
Yeah, the one thing that I would say is there are individuals that have, you know, they're coming into the workforce, the professional workforce, without prior work experience. So many folks that we've seen in my prior organization that were coming in as new employees out of college, you know, were playing sports in high school, played sports in college, which is great, you know, background, or maybe they were doing some sort of activity, and then their first job was in the first actual paid job was after college at a major corporation. And so it's just the, you know, taking the time to understand what the norms are, what your certain expectations of, you know, coming to work and, you know, how does that work environment work, and just kind of understanding the culture of an organization, you know, obviously still bring their individuality to work, but also, you know, knowing it may be your a first role to take the time and kind of ask the extra questions of what that organization expectations are for folks.
So that's good. And you handled that delicately. That was very good. That was very good, Kevin. I think it's good advice. Let me just ask you one thing. Now, obviously I'm not working on my master's or my doctorate, but one of the things I've observed is that millennials are fearless. You could pretty much throw anything at them and they'll be game to give it a try. Regardless of their experience, their exposure, they seem not to be timid in any way. And that's a blessing and a curse, because if they're not careful, they could get thrown into the deep end and perhaps have some difficulties. But setting that cautionary part to the side for a moment, it's a wonderful, wonderful characteristic. Their appetite to learn, to try, to participate, to get in there, get dirty, get involved. I think that's one of the special under-discussed parts of the generation that I see. Can you speak to that?
I would agree with that, by the way. The millennial generation grew up with instant access to any question that they had, or instant access to knowledge, where Gen X baby boomers came to work with the knowledge that they had acquired through previous work, through education, and through
personal
experience. And so now you've got a generation that's coming in that doesn't that believes that they don't need to know it because they have access to the answer, which frankly is true. So they are a little bit more aggressive. They say, hey, we can go get this done, even though per se they may not have the knowledge, but they know how to get the knowledge.
Absolutely.
And so they're leveraging all of their information that they can access through peers, through, you know, any knowledge online, to be able to bring that expertise, even though they don't have it embedded in their own personal experience. It's the first generation that's had access more so than anybody else to
No, that's good. And as a leader, I have not led as big of organizations as you have. I'm a small business owner, but I think as a leader, probably regardless of big or small, is it's an advantage as a leader, because there are some times when I'll be like, you know, hey, I'd like to do this. Can you look into that or research it or build it or whatever? And they'll ask me questions and I could literally say, I don't know. I think it could be done. I have a feeling it could be done, but I can't really tell you how. And they are very game to figure it out. I could tell you, like, the youngest member of my team is 24. When I was his age, and this might be a commentary just on me, but I have a feeling not, is it would be hard for me to be given so little to work off of. It would have been very uncomfortable for me. But for that generation, especially the really outstanding members of that generation, you know, they relish that and they feed off that. And that's wonderful as a leader, because it opens up lots of possibilities for creativity and improved efficiencies. You could do a lot with that if you embrace that powerful characteristic. You got to rein it in sometimes. You got to be a little careful, but it's a good thing for leaders.
Well, and that's really where kind of the background and the backdrop behind the thesis that I'm working on, because the research I'll have will be interviewing a number of millennials, doing surveys, sitting down with leaders, you know, through their individual conversations with millennials to understand, you know, how does leadership change, right? Because it's going to be important that as leaders, myself and others, evolve to say, how do you take advantage of exactly what we've been talking about and lead more effectively, to say you don't need to give them everything. You can give them the goalpost and they'll figure out how to get there and beyond in a more effective way than you or I could have thought possible. And so how do you change that leadership to get them there?
Yeah, that's terrific. That's terrific. Kevin, our time flew by here. It went as even faster than I thought, because it's such a good discussion. Anything that you wanted to cover that we didn't kind of get to related to your doctoral thesis, leadership, millennials, anything else you wanted to touch on, anything you were really hoping we talked about?
Yeah, we had a great conversation. I think I touched on, you know, there's so much around leadership and the history of where leaders started and how leadership has evolved. A lot of that, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of doing that research in the thesis and getting more in depth. But for our conversation and really just digging into the topic itself, I think we were able to cover everything. I appreciate it, and that's I appreciate you reaching out and having the conversation as
well.
That's
awesome. Yes, I'm glad I hunted you down. I just wanted to thank you for taking the time, listeners. I'll be back with you on the next episode of the Simply Financial Podcast very soon. In the meantime, go to the website, ElliottWealth.com. Get more information about me, the rest of the team, how we help our clients win with money. And, of course, at this stage of the podcast, I always ask for you to subscribe if you haven't already. Recommend it to a friend. We would like to build our listener base. So if you could do me a favor with that, it would be great. Thanks again. I'll be back with you very soon.
The views expressed are not necessarily the opinion of Sage Point Financial Incorporated and should not be construed directly or indirectly as an offer to buy or sell any securities mentioned herein. Investing is subject to risks, including loss of principal invested. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. No strategy can assure a profit nor protect against loss. Please note that individual situations can vary. Therefore, the information should be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Please note, the information being provided is strictly as a courtesy. When you link to any of the websites provided here, you are leaving this website. We make no representation as to the completeness or accuracy of the information provided at these websites, nor is the company liable for any direct or indirect technical or system issues or any consequences arising out of your access to your use of third-party technologies, websites, information, and programs made available through this website. When you access one of these websites, you are leaving our website and assume total responsibility and risk for your use of the websites you are linking to. Securities and advisory services are offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Insurance services offered through Elliott Wealth Management, LLC, not affiliated with Sage Point Financial.